Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
Hey, what's up, friends? I'm Scott Hodge. Hey, once again, welcome to our digital liturgy for Sunday, the week of Sunday, February 25th, 2024. Hey, I want to begin today by bringing us back into a passage of scripture we looked at a couple weeks ago. One that I think is actually quite appropriate for us to look at again, especially during this season of Lent. Psalm chapter 139, starting at verse 23, the psalmist writes these words, "Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting." You know, this passage echoes what I think is the essence of this series we began last weekend, entitled Me, Myself, and Why: Self-Awareness with the Enneagram. And as the name implies, we're using the power and the wisdom of this great tool called the Enneagram because it invites us to go deeper into our exploration and to uncover the layers of being that we might not understand, or perhaps that we've even chosen to overlook. And so I think this season of Lent is the perfect time for us, not just to explore the Enneagram, but more importantly, to dive into what the Enneagram has to show us about ourselves. Now, we begin last weekend. If you're with us, you'll remember we were introduced to this concept of the Enneagram. If you missed that one, you might want to pause here, go back, listen, watch that one, and then come back. But hopefully, those of you who were able to join us, you were able to utilize the assessment that we linked you to last weekend that helps you discover your number. And if you haven't, or you tried and you're just like, I don't know about this, or you're just not convinced that it's actually your number, that's okay. Hey, just hang in there with us. Don't stress. But I am curious, for those of you who have, I'm curious, how confident do you feel about the accuracy of your number that the assessment gave you? And then my other question, I guess, is which aspects of your Enneagram type do you feel most strongly connected to or identify with? Anyway, you know, I think one of the beautiful things about understanding our number is how it can help us uncover, and I think this is really important we remember this, is that it helps us uncover the gifts that are within us. That's right, those unique gifts that each of us have to bring to our communities, to our relationships, to others around us, our workplaces, I mean, on down the list. See, I think it's important to understand that the Enneagram does not just show us who we are, but it shows us the gifts that we've been designed to share. Suzanne Stabile, she's an author who writes a lot about the Enneagram. She reminds us that the Enneagram does not put you in a box. It shows you the box you're already in and how to get out of it. I kind of like that approach. I don't think it's demonizing a number. I don't think it's saying that your type is not good and you gotta somehow shed that number. I don't think it's saying that at all. But I think this is saying, you know, this is not just a journey of self-discovery. In many ways, it's a call to action. You know, it's an invitation to step out of our boxes and to use our gifts in service to others, to build up communities, to enrich relationships. And I think one of the ways that one of the things that can help us step out of the box is by understanding some of the deeper aspects of the Enneagram, which we're going to start diving into today by taking a look at what's known as wings. That's right, wings, W-I-N-G-S. So, what are wings? That's right, you have wings, friends. What are wings? Well, imagine for a moment that you are an artist. You're standing in front of a big blank canvas, and your Enneagram number, let's say, is the primary color you choose to paint with. That's bold, defining, central to the masterpiece you're creating. Your wings, however, are like those secondary colors on either side of the of your primary hue on the color wheel. And when you blend those adjacent colors with your main one, well, you end up bringing depth, nuance, and richness to your painting that wasn't there before. So today, we're going to explore those secondary colors, so to speak, those wings, and how they invite us to paint a more complete picture of ourselves and the unique contributions we're meant to make in this world. And since this is a conversation series, I want to dive right into my conversation with Benjamin and Anna. So are you ready? All right, here we go.
Oh, we're here.
Hey, what's up, Benjamin and Anna? Sorry to interrupt your meeting you guys were having, but it just seemed like a good time to have some conversation.
Magic.
About wings. Let's talk about wings, not the kind of wings you eat, but the kind of wings that you fly with.
Oh, hell, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to share that the wandering albatross has the largest wingspan of any known bird at 11 and a half feet wide.
Dang. Could you imagine seeing one of those suckers flying through the air? That would just be mind-blowing.
How do they wander with those? My
contribution.
They got to tuck them in there really good, right? Right.
Get their wandering wings. On.
Let's stay on track here.
Wing suits.
So a wing.
Wait, I thought we were talking about wings.
Yeah,
that's what I prepped. Wings. I prepped wings. Okay.
A wing, as it pertains to the Enneagram,
thank you,
is a secondary personality type adjacent to your primary type that influences and adds nuances to your core characteristics. So one way of looking at this, like I heard someone say that your Enneagram type, your main number, determines your core desires, your core fears. Your Enneagram wing determines your behaviors. So I think that is probably mostly true. I haven't thought about it enough to say for sure, but I think that seems true. So let's pick on Benjamin J. Thomas real quick. Let's take your number. What's your primary number, Benjamin?
Yeah, I'm a nine. And
you're nine. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about that.
That's really interesting.
What is the nine?
Yeah, so my, you know, if I think about like sort of my core motivation is to make harmony, make peace, and to resolve situations and all those things. In that, like, I can find myself either gravitating toward like just like passivity, or I find myself like when I'm healthy and gravitating toward action. The two wings are would be the one and the eight. So if you picture the thing, the one and the eight would be my wings. I've never really, up until recently, always really kind of fought back on that. I was always like, I don't identify at all with either the one or the eight. It was always a real struggle for me. I'm like, I definitely identify with the nine. I also identify with the seven. So it was always a little bit of a hard thing for me until just really the past, I would say, couple of years, I started really noticing. And now I notice that my eight wing, I think, is probably my dominant wing. The eight wing kind of gives me this like a little bit of angst. There's like a little bit of like this like challenging, angsty, like I don't like systems. Like systems bother the fuck out of me. Oh, sorry. I got a passionate, we'll bleep that. Systems drive me nuts. Like, so whenever I feel that sort of like inside me, like that causes me to sort of react, that there's I want to challenge, I want to push back on that. I notice that in me. That can, for me, then lead to a whole negative feel where I'm kind of against things. Or if I harness that right, I'm fighting for the underdog. I'm looking out for those who are in need. I'm like seeing how systems can work against people's health and prosperity and all those things, and work with that to create wholeness and healing. So that's kind of how I've come to terms with my eight.
As a nine,
I love the combination. Real quick, I love the combination of nine with an eight wing, because it's like very much, I want peace and harmony, and I will fight you until you agree with me.
It is this weird paradox, which I think was for me a little bit of a struggle of how I don't get it. I don't get that part at all.
There's an inherent tension.
There's an inherent
between your dominant and your wing.
Totally, yeah.
And don't you guys think too? So it's interesting. I've known both of you for a lot of years now, and as you know, as you're talking, Benjamin, I'm thinking like, I feel like I have, and I'm curious if you guys have seen this in me. We could talk about that in a minute, but I feel like I have seen you become more of an eight wing in the last several years than when I first met you. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like the same has happened to me. So just to back up, by the way, there's a PDF that we have linked for you guys that you might want to go ahead and click and download. It's sort of an Enneagram at a glance, and it contains your core type and then the wings. That we can sort of follow along with what we're talking about. But for the nine, the peacemaker, right? Easygoing, this is your core. Easygoing, mm-hmm. adaptable, conflict avoidant, you merge well with others. Mm-hmm. The eight wing, more assertive, mm-hmm. more independent, mm-hmm. more decisive when challenged.
Yeah.
The one wing to a nine is more principled, organized, perfectionist kind of thing, right?
Right.
And what you're saying here is you feel like you have become, would you say you feel like you've become more of an eight wing? You, like that part has become more a part of, shows itself more than before?
Yeah, I think that one in particular seems more dominant. Although I will say, I think that I've expanded in a certain way that has allowed me access to my one wing. I've also become more aware of how my one wing has stopped me from action in certain scenarios where I can get perfectionistic mm-hmm. about things to the degree where I stop moving forward, which for a nine, that is not an action. Like that can become actually a really unhealthy thing. So I've started to learn right. to notice that part of how my one wing can do that to me.
It's interesting how most of us do lean more towards one side.
Yeah.
Right. For whatever reason, maybe the view's better over there.
Yeah, or maybe it's for a period of time in life. Like there's a season when you're leaning more into one side, and yeah,
totally. It's like your favorite coffee mug. It just feels right, you right, know.
And totally.
And but I think what we miss is that the other side, that path that's like less traveled, mm-hmm. has its own unique beauty as well.
Yeah.
And so it's a healthy way, I think, to approach wings is not to just go, well, I'm a whatever with a whatever wing, and that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. I think it really benefits us to like pay attention to both wings because there's something beautiful. There's gifts in both of those wings. You know, what about you, Anna? Can you talk about yours for a minute?
Sure. So I'm a four. And as we talked about last week, I mistyped for like 5 years as a three because I had such a strong three wing. And it was because of a good friend who knows me well, and then also because of the arrows, which we'll get into probably next week. I realized I'm actually a four with a very, very strong three wing. And what's interesting about that is the four, I want to be like authentic and like seen for who I am. And the kind of the core story that I find that fours and I find ourselves telling ourselves is that everyone else has it figured out and we're kind of like missing some key information. So there's something a little bit wrong with us. And so we're going to fix that problem by being really unique and authentic and special. And so there's this tension there. And then if you add the three wing on top of that, there's the three is like, they want to be the achiever. So they want to succeed. And then you kind of lose that authenticity because you start to blend into, well, what do people want me to see? I'm going to put this mask on. Mm-hmm. What do people want me to be? And so you end up performing in that way. And so for me, learning to kind of lean out of my three wing and kind of more into my four was really a healthy, healthy process because it helped me get more in touch with who I am and who I want to be as an individual. And not quite so much this performance, success, need to achieve, need to, you know, top those sales numbers every single month. Back into like, no, actually, I'm really happy when I sit out the window and read poetry in the morning. And that's my jam. That's my favorite cup of coffee. So,
yeah, that's so interesting, man. I don't know who said this, but they talked about how like, it's like writing, we all have a dominant hand that we write with, that it's just more natural. But as we sometimes, you know, there are times we need to use our other hand, whether it's like opening, like, so when I go to open a jar, I can't, like, it's harder for me to open it with, I'm right-handed, but I can do it really easy with my left hand if I'm holding, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like sometimes you have to lean into that other hand to do things you couldn't do with your dominant hand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one thing that's been interesting for me is how, like, in different seasons of my life, I've really seen those different wings come out. Like, when I was in school, that three wing was really dominant. And then when I was not in school, that five wing kind of, you know, emerged a little more, that investigator wing, which is more withdrawing, more curious. Like, I love to learn. I love information. I can lean hard into that five wing. And then being in a job that like demanded a lot from me, back into the three. And so it's like, there's kind of this push and pull.
I love this because it's like learning how to, like, you've got these bags of these strengths that you're kind of pulling on tools from time to time. And as you learn it, like, you've been able to kind of navigate that. And I love Anna. I mean, you really are like a person that I respect and look up to as far as somebody who really is in touch with feelings and welcomes kind of all things, which for a four, that makes so much sense. And it's like you're the feelingness is at such a, your core, and your welcoming and the opening to that is has been such a strong way that you've been able to navigate all these things in life.
Thank you, Benjamin.
You know, so let's give some other examples. So let's say some of you maybe who are an eight, for example. Eights are known for their intensity and very assertive. Well, by becoming more aware of both wings, what you might find is you might find a softer, more relational approach by leaning more into that nine wing. Mm-hmm. Or at times when maybe you need to be more entrepreneurial or risk-taking, you might tap into that seven wing, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't dilute your eightness, or the essence of the eightness, but it enriches it. I mean, man, the more I think about all of this, it's like this is how wholeness comes into our lives is by integrating, not by denying or pushing it aside, right? But it's by integration. And so it's like for that eight, you know, it doesn't dilute the essence of your number, but it enriches it and offers you actually better ways to connect and to lead and to be in relationships. Or let's say a type six, right? So sixes are very loyal. They like to be very prepared. So they might find a nurturing, I don't know, it would be nurturing, I suppose, like if they lean into their two wing, or more analytical and independent, leaning into their five wing, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't compromise who they are at their core. It enriches it, right? So let me talk about my number real quick.
Yeah.
I'm a seven, Enneagram seven. So it's interesting as I was thinking about this. So, you know, at the core, sevens are very optimistic, adventurous, easily distracted, freedom loving. And the six wing is more cautious, analytical. It's more, I pick up that it's more about like pursuing relationships with others, you know, being more sensitive to the feelings and needs of others, that kind of thing. Eight wing, which is what I have identified with most of my life up to this point, more assertive, more direct, more boundary pushing. But what's interesting is I think it is true that a lot of it depends on what life is requiring of you in the moment at that time.
Yeah.
Like I feel like when the Orchard was going more like they were going that mega church route, and there was a lot of staff to manage, and there was a lot of, you know, just, it was just like leadership, 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 leadership all the time. Like I learned to lead as an eight, and you guys both remember me more as an eight, seven with an eight wing. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yeah.
Or am I crazy?
Cause spot on, dude. I think that you're spot on.
I feel like there's been a big shift in me as like, in the things I'm doing now that require more of like my sixness. Than my eightness. Does that make sense? Did you guys see that?
Absolutely. One thing that's really interesting to me is how and I think this is true for all the wings, that on either wing you have like opposites. And so you at eights, super independent, right? Sixes, super collaborative. Mm-hmm. You know? And so like, look, now we're here, we're having a teaching that's a conversation format. This is collaborative teaching. Yeah. Very different from like old school 40 minutes sermons by Scott, like a very different vibe. Right. And like, for me, at the four, the three, very image conscious, very like presentation minded. And then there's the five that couldn't care less, very withdrawn, secretive. Like I think that's true.
Yeah,
and that might be an interesting thing for people to pay attention to. Like, what are the opposites, and both when do I lean in them without thinking about it? And when might I like intentionally want to lean in those different ways?
There are times when certain conversations or certain situations demand me being more assertive, and you know, having, you know, putting on, I don't want to say putting on like it's fake, but like showing more charisma or whatever, like even like remaining calm in crises, like mm-hmm. crisis situations, right? Being able to walk into a crisis and be able to bring that calm energy, mm-hmm. right? That's that eight, right? But then there's the thing like that's happening in my life, I would say these last few years, I just felt like a little choke of emotion as I'm saying this, my sixthness is calling me into a greater place of vulnerability in relationships and being more collaborative. And what I'm finding now, I feel like when I was younger, I had this attitude like, I can do it on my own. Screw everybody. Everybody's replaceable. I'll get it done, right? Now I'm like, I don't want to do it alone, man. Mm. If all the people around me like just take off, I think I'd be done. Like, because I only want to do this with the people that are around me. You know, like the collaboration is such a more of a greater part of my life and my leadership now. But it's interesting how we bounce back and forth. This has really been interesting, just even these last few days, like diving into the wings for me.
I really like how
you highlighted how both of those are sometimes necessary strengths. Like it's not like, oh, when I'm in my eight wing, that's bad. And I'm in six wing, it's good. It's like both of those are necessary strengths that you can lean into.
And how you've learned lean into it, how you've learned how to access those things. It's like having literally like having body muscle strength in a certain area. You're like, I know how to lean into my upper body when I have to like move this car. Who's moving cars? I don't know. But like, that
right.
It's a muscle. You've learned how to access that.
It feels like it sometimes.
Sometimes it feels like that, but yeah.
Well, and I'm also realizing, I mean, I as I'm looking at my wings, I'm going, man, I have some work to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I do. I have, there's some parts of my six wing that I don't know. Sometimes maybe I'm afraid because it feels too vulnerable or it feels weak compared to like how I feel like I'm supposed to be as a leader or as a father or as, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just interesting, you know?
I think it's helpful. So
the
helpful.
FOMO. Go ahead.
I want to hear about you talk about FOMO and I'll tell you what it
is. No, I just think like FOMO is like, FOMO, fear of missing out, man, is like, oh God, that derails me sometimes.
Yeah.
It does. It causes me, I don't want to get too personal because some of this stuff is really fresh and I'm like still working it out and figuring it out. But like, man, I don't know, like this fear of missing out, it can really like sabotage the healthy way of being present with someone.
I wonder, and this is maybe actually connected to what I was going to say about, I love being able to focus on our strengths first. And if you find yourself slipping into negativity and even the FOMO piece, for me, the FOMO will kick in when I'm a little too focused on what I'm lacking and my weaknesses. When I'm meditating on those types of things and I'm meditating on what I maybe messed up in the past or should have done differently or wish I had known back then and all those things. Kind of lends itself toward FOMO. It lends itself to like meditating on our strengths. It's okay to look at your strengths, and the Enneagram is a wonderful tool, I think, to be able to observe like, man, I got some growth to do here. But if our 2 feet are planted first and foremost in our strengths and looking very like first, our first priority, looking at like, well, where do we show up like in our fullness? That feels like such a healthier place than to be able to stand and then be able to handle all of these places where we see the growth areas or we see the places where you have regret or any of that.
One question that I like to ask myself when I'm trying to figure that out is when and where do I feel like myself? Like, what am I doing where I just feel, it's not like, I think I'm strong in this situation. It's like, when do I really feel like myself?
That's really good.
You know, like, I feel like myself when I'm, like, I homeschool my kids. I feel like myself when I'm teaching my daughter to read.
Yeah.
That's not true for every parent.
Right, right.
Some but people listening are going, can you teach my
yeah,
kid?
Yeah, I know. But like for me, that's something where I feel like myself, and that doesn't necessarily have to do with my Enneagram number, but that is just a really kind of helpful thing to notice, to pause and where and like, what am I doing when I feel like Anna? Mm-hmm.
So I think this would be a good moment just to remind everyone when we're talking about wings, your wing, you have two wings and the wings are the numbers next to your primary number, right? So if you're a two, your wing is not a seven. Your wing is not a nine. If you're a two, you either have a one wing or a three wing, right? I think that's important. There are other things called lines that we're going to talk about later, but just for the sake of keeping this simple and clear, today we're talking about those wings. And I think if there's one thing I hope we can walk away from today, it's that it's in engaging with both wings. It does not dilute who you are. It enriches you, right? It's like adding more, like I said earlier, adding more colors to the palette, right? Suddenly you're not just working with blue or red. Now you got this whole spectrum of purples to explore, right? Mm-hmm. It's like every time you lean into your less dominant wing, you're not leaving the base behind. You're just stretching and growing and expanding. It's kind of like, this popped in my head yesterday, this when we talk about human consciousness and this idea of like transcend and include, right? This idea that we're not throwing out anything. We're just adding to the... Unless there's things we're throwing out that just aren't helping us out anymore.
I could even, those
well, it is Lent. I mean, so.
It is, yeah, it yeah is that's Lent. Right. You're paring down, but with the essence that you can't expand. So the paring down comes with going, I'm getting down to the core of who I really am. And Anna's question is a great guide point. Where do you feel the most you? Yeah. And that's a great place to get in touch with that.
Well, and that's where like I'm going to move away from my three wing in certain circumstances because I'm going to recognize because I've become conscious of it. I'm going to recognize, oh, this is a situation where my three wing is really coming out and it's trying to protect me. And I'm putting on these masks and I'm looking for accolades outside of myself and I need to give that up.
I need to
stop doing that because that is not making me feel like Anna and that is not who God created me to be. And I want to become who God created me to be. And so I'm going to look inward at my behavior, at my emotions, at my thoughts, and I'm going to ask those. I like to think of like my inner world as like a group of people gathered around a campfire, which is going to sound crazy, but like I've got like me, Anna, and then I've got like, you know, Anna at three and Anna at two. And be like, you know what? You need to walk away from the circle for a little while. Cause like, you're not helping. And I think that that's such a good, like, you sound like a crazy person. Like, yes, all my different personalities inside of me.
so healthy. Well, I think that leads us into something I would like to kind of maybe land the plane with in our conversation today. And that is like, what are some ways that, we can be intentional about leaning into our less dominant wing? Let's talk about that because that's the one that's going to be more of a challenge. How can we be more intentional about leaning into our less dominant wing? You guys have anything you want to say on that? I think you just gave one, Anna, like observe. I loved what you said a minute ago. When do you feel most like yourself? And I think that's like observing, pay attention to those moments when you do feel that, or pay attention to where like your dominant wing is like in full force, like, know, you know, what triggers that? How does it feel? Then start to notice what happens when you might be ignoring the other wing. Like, is there a situation that could use more of that side of you? That's exactly what you're talking about, Anna, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think too, that's a good, like, because we're in the season of Lent and a lot of people they're like, I'm just going to fast because I'm going to give up chocolate because it seems like that's good for me, or I'm going to give up social media, whatever. I would challenge people to look at yourself and fast from the things that make you not feel like you.
That's so good, Anna. That's a good
way. Rather than just picking something because you think it would be a good idea, really look and search your heart and figure out what is getting in the way and take a break from that.
Beautiful.
That's great.
I can't add anything to that.
I love that, Anna.
That's,
yep.
I do too.
I would, I think the only thing I would notice exploring and kind of cultivating your curiosity in yourself. For some of us, you know, I'm an avid journaler, so I get to notice a lot of things that happened in the past and look at them and getting curious of, and then start to notice like how can I now show up? I've been shaped. I'm a different being in this place right now. I'm a more centered, and I have access to tools that I didn't have a few years ago even. So kind of asking that question, maybe how can I leverage the good of this wing that's right next to me to this particular moment in my time right now here on Earth? So,
that's good.
Look for some specificity. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of asking yourself, being open to.
Don't take everything so serious either, right? Like, practice and have fun with it. Like,
says the seven.
I'm right-handed. Awesome. I'm right. Have you ever done one of those things, Ian, been in like an art class where they're like, draw an object, but use your left hand if you're right-handed, use your right hand if you're left-handed. And it's like, oh my God, that's kind of what it probably feels like to start tapping into that less dominant wing, right? At first it's awkward, but with time, I think it clicks. And I wish that like the intentionality that we're talking about this right now, I wish I would have had that kind of intentionality with this 10 years ago, 15 years ago, right? Yeah, I feel like anywhere where there's been integration, a lot of times I just feel like, whew, okay, that was just intuitive, lucky somehow. But man, how much further ahead I feel like I could be if there was more intentionality around this, right? And so I think practice, right? And seek feedback from friends. I love that like we've known each other long enough to where we can see in each other where we've shifted and where we've tapped into these other wings in our lives, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let me give you guys, let me throw out a couple of conversation starters for those of you who are, if you're gathered with a few people, these would be great conversations to have. Or if you just want to journal, that's fine too. I'm going to just throw out a couple questions, pick the ones that seem most relevant to you. But I want to throw in that one that Anna asked a minute ago, because I think that's really, and that's probably a good journaling question or a conversation, whatever. But when do you really feel like yourself? Do you want to expound on that, or is that simple enough?
When and where and how? Yeah.
Get specific.
Yeah.
Get specific.
Yeah. Get specific. I think that's really helpful to be specific.
Get specific. That's good. And then another one, taking a step back to, you know, even last week, what Enneagram type do you most identify with? What's that number? And what, looking at it through the lenses of giftings in your life, what gifts does this number affirm in your life? Mm-hmm. What Enneagram type do you most identify with, and what gifts does this number affirm in your life? And then here's a wing question. Which one of your wings is most dominant, and why do you think that is?
Your spicy one or your sweet one?
Boneless or, yeah, which one of your wings is most dominant? And why do you think that is? And then I got a bonus question. I'm just going to throw this out there. Can you recall a recent instance where your response to whatever situation, whatever conversation, was heavily influenced by your dominant wing? How might the situation have differed if you had engaged with your less dominant wing?
Oh, that's meaty right there.
Right? And then what does this tell you? What does it tell you about the potential for growth and change? Imagine being able to approach that situation from your less dominant wing, how that might have changed the situation.
Yeah. Woo!
That's going to take some courage.
We got some work to do, friends.
That's a courageous question right there. I love it.
Well, Benjamin, Anna, thank you guys so much. This was a really fun conversation.
Likewise.
And I look forward to where we're going to be going in the weeks ahead.
Yeah.
So happy Lent, guys. Thank you very much.
All right. Peace.
Happy Lent.
Happy Lent.
Well, thank you so much, Benjamin and Anna. What a great conversation. Listen, as we start to bring our time together to a close, let's take a moment and let's breathe. Let's lean in. We've been on a journey today, haven't we? Exploring the wings of our Enneagram numbers, discovering those side paths that offer us a view we might not have seen before. It's been beautiful, right? And you know, isn't it fascinating too how this journey of understanding our wings, of integrating these parts of ourselves in so many ways mirror the larger journey we're on in our faith, right? Our spiritual journey. I don't know why, but what one passage that came to mind is where Paul says in his letter to the Colossians, he says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience." I love the intentionality of this, right? Clothe yourself. I suppose like if Paul was to speak to us right now after we've had this conversation, he might say something to us like, hey, you know, you've got these incredible qualities. You've got these gifts, these wings, if you will, at your disposal. So wrap them around you. Let them change the way you walk into a room, the way you engage with your world. So, anyways, we bring a close to our conversation today. Let's carry that image with us. You know, imagine wrapping those wings around you, those qualities of your adjacent types, those parts of you that you might not always pay attention to, but that offer something quite beautiful. Let them be a cloak of transformation, guiding you towards becoming more like Christ in every interaction, more as the person you've been created to be in every decision and every moment of your life. And by the way, let's not forget, this is a communal journey, right? We're in this together. We're supporting each other, learning from each other, growing together, right? It's like we're a part of this beautiful mosaic, each of us, a unique piece, a unique shape, but together creating something beautiful, something so divine. And so friends, may you walk from here with a new sense of your wings, those parts of you waiting to be explored, waiting to take flight. May you find them in the strength to face your challenges, the grace to embrace your growth, and the courage to step into the fullness of who you have been created to be. And friends, in doing so, may you reflect the love and compassion and the boundless creativity of the God who made you, who loves you, and who is always inviting you into something new, something beautiful, something holy. Amen and amen.